This morning we're going to be looking at a passage from Matthew chapter 6, back at the Sermon on the Mount. The plan was that this was going to work a lot better the Sunday after the last sermon I did, but now it's 3 weeks later, so I don't know. We'll see how well it works, but we're talking about storing up treasures on earth versus treasures in heaven. And I want to kind of set this passage up because this is a passage I think that gets misquoted quite a bit, not so much in what the passage says, but the intent, because it's really important to remember that when Jesus is preaching the Sermon on the Mount, the vast majority of the people that are there listening are poor. Now, if you think about the idea that Jesus is preaching to a bunch of poor people, why would he be telling poor people about the dangers of storing up treasures on earth when these people didn't have any earthly treasures? So there is some context, I think, in this text, which is important, because Jesus is really talking about the Pharisees and the example they set. But I do want to make sure we have a distinction, because I think sometimes when we look at this text and it talks about storing up treasures on earth, people think, does that mean I'm not supposed to have a savings account? I mean, what is that supposed to mean? So I think it's important to note that Jesus is preaching this to poor people predominantly, and a lot of this, the talk about the treasures on earth and the treasures in heaven, is a reference to the Pharisees. But let's get into the text and see how Jesus addresses this, and then we'll talk about it. He says, do not store up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourself treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So we're going to look at the first half of this and talk about the treasures on earth. When you think about that phrase, don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth, what comes to your mind when you hear that phrase, treasure?
Goods.
What?
Your goods,
cars, okay, money, homes. How about this? How about health? Any of you think about health? How many of you treasure your physical well-being? Now, some of you are going, look at me. Clearly not a passion for me. But look, I know people who get up every morning and run. And they run, it doesn't matter if it's snowing or raining, it doesn't matter, because they are obsessed with their physical body and staying in shape, and they're passionate about it. And when I say passion, I mean they are really passionate about it. And there's nothing wrong with that, but when we start to think about this text and what it means to have treasures, I think that term really means different things to different people. I think it means different things to different people. Some people are incredibly passionate about their physical well-being. Some people are incredibly passionate about their legacy or their reputation. I was watching a movie in the last couple weeks, and I don't even remember what the movie was, but there was the star of the movie was talking about his reputation, how he wanted to be remembered. Any of you ever worry about how people are going to remember you? And I would guess some of you probably do. Some of you probably worry about your legacy, and you think, how am I going to be remembered when I'm gone? And how are people going to talk about me when I'm gone? And so that could be a treasure for some people, their legacy. And so when you start thinking about your legacy and you start thinking about your physical well-being, I think it's important for us not to kind of compartmentalize treasures as financial wealth, because that's not where everybody's treasure is. Some people don't care about money. You can tell the way they spend it. One of my favorite things about premarital counseling is when we talk about money. Because there is nothing more entertaining than having a couple where one is a spender and one is a saver. And one of the things we'll ask, you know, a lot of times in premarital counseling, I'll ask a question. I say, I want you to take a piece of paper and write down how much money you feel like you would want in the bank to feel comfortable. The spender will frequently put a number somewhere between $300 and $500. If I have $500 in the bank, I'm good to go. And then the saver will usually put between $30,000 and $50,000 in the bank. And then I will look at these two people and go, you two are going to get divorced. Because you've got one person who thinks, I got to have 50 grand in the bank to be safe, and another one that thinks, I got to have 500. So while one person is trying to save money, you know what the other one's doing? Spending it. They're spending it. But it speaks to the fact that we've all been raised different. And even for poor people who did not have necessarily a lot of financial wealth, Jesus is giving a stark warning. He says, look, all of you have different treasures. This is not always about financial wealth, but it's about where our passions are, what's really important to us. And so our treasure could be our legacy, our treasure could be our health, our treasure could be our career. It doesn't have to be money, but certainly could be money and possessions. But Jesus warns these people. He says, listen, don't store up for yourself this treasure on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. He said, you don't want to put all your effort into something that can be destroyed so easily as the things in this world. I don't know how many of you are sports fans or have been paying attention to this in the news. But there's a football coach named John Gruden. Any of you know who John Gruden is? John Gruden won a Super Bowl championship with the Raiders years ago. Got out of coaching and got into broadcasting, and he was a Monday Night Football broadcaster for several years. And then about 5 years ago, he got lured out of retirement. The coach of the Raiders offered him a 10-year, $100 million contract to come back and coach the Raiders. And so he came back and he's coaching the Raiders. And John Gruden has always been one of the most respected coaches in the league, whether you thought he was a good coach or not. Everybody loved Gruden. He was doing commercials and he was very popular. But in his time of his comeback, a bunch of his emails got released as part of an investigation. And John Gruden, in some of those emails, used some racist language in some of his emails and some misogynistic language. I'm not necessarily, I haven't read the emails. I don't know what all of them mean. But here's what this is all about. This man's reputation is done. His reputation is ruined. It's not going to be fixed. And you imagine somebody who spent a lifetime trying to develop a reputation and a legacy, and in one day, when those emails got released, guess what happened to a lifetime's work? It's gone. Now, you may say, well, that's not really moth or rust, but the idea is pretty much the same. If his treasure was his legacy, and he spent a lifetime putting all his effort into that reputation and that legacy, in one day's time, it's gone. And it can't be fixed. It can't be fixed. And so when we look at this text and we think about, well, what is Jesus trying to communicate to these people? These are poor people. Why is he telling them not to try to store up treasures on earth? These people didn't have anything. Most of them were dirt poor. What Jesus is really addressing here is where our passion lies and where we want our story to be written. And this is really true, and just to give you an idea of how true this is, I mean, you think about there are ministers who have put their entire life's work into developing an earthly reputation. But Jesus says, your treasure does not need to be an earthly treasure. Your treasure does not need to be what other people think of you. Now, it's nice if people think good about you. Jesus isn't suggesting we shouldn't care about those things. But here's the reality of this treasure concept. Let me ask you a question. Have any of you ever been to a funeral where when they were talking about the person in the funeral, you were like, who are they talking about? I mean, they're talking about this person like this is the greatest person that ever lived. It's like, I must be at the wrong place. Now, as a minister who's done his share of funerals over the years, one of the things you understand as a minister is that you never want to get up at a funeral and go, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to tell you, this person was a rotten person or going to hell. I'm just telling the truth. I'm dropping a truth bomb here. Y'all all know it. We're not surprising anybody here when I tell you this. Nobody liked this person. I'm only doing this because they're paying me. But nobody liked this person. Everybody hated this person. And we all know where this person is, so I'm not going to get up and lie and try to tell you how awesome they were. What would you think if you heard that at a sermon? You'd think, refreshingly honest, but in very poor taste. That's what you would think. The reality is, when I die and I stand before God, you know who he's not going to ask if I should get into heaven? You. He's not going to ask any of you. When you die and you stand before the Lord, he's not going to call me and go, hey, you know, Stuart, you are this person's minister. What do you think? Get him out of there. I had to spend years with him in church. I don't want to spend eternity with him. Wouldn't that be terrible if your minister said that? You know, the only person whose opinion is really going to matter on judgment day is the judge. And so Jesus is encouraging these people to think about that as they look about where their treasure is and where they put all their passion and their energy. And he goes, look, you don't want to store up for yourself treasures on earth because that stuff doesn't last. That stuff doesn't last. Any of you ever known anybody that lost everything? Fire. Any of you ever, you've seen when these storms will come through and you'll see where some tornado's gone through a neighborhood and just leveled 10 or 15 houses. And you'll see people sifting through the rubble of their home. And they're picking up memorabilia pieces that have just been destroyed, irreplaceable memories that are just destroyed and strode over the countryside. And you identify with that and you're like, wow, that's so terrible. And so that's what Jesus is talking about. He says, when we put all our energy into stuff here in this world, it's all going to end the same. It's all going to end the same. And it doesn't matter. It may not happen today or next week. I mean, you think about in recent years, how many of the founding fathers have had their reputations attacked as we've gone back and kind of as historically looked at these people differently because of slavery or because of other things. We see people's names being taken off monuments and people's names being taken off of schools because, well, this person, by the standard that we live by today, this person doesn't live up to that standard. Reputations are not permanent. And so Jesus says, look, you look up at these treasures that you want to put away, and you've got all these things you want to build up on this earth, your reputation and your health and all these other things, but they're not permanent. So what is Jesus' solution? He says, store up for yourself treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is something that I've probably thought about more in recent years than I did when I was younger. As my kids have gotten into college now, they're college age, and I start thinking about what I want my legacy as their parent to be. And I start thinking about, what would be the greatest thing? What would be the, when I die, assuming I don't fall over today of the Rona, but, in a few years when I'm gone and my kids and their spouses, maybe my grandkids, I'm not holding my breath on either one of those things, but if they come together at my funeral, I wonder, what would I want my kids to say about me at my funeral? I can tell you what they're not going to say. Whew, man, I'm so glad Dad left us all that money. That ain't what they're going to say. I can tell you that right now. That ain't what they're going to say. But, I start thinking about what I've said at my mother's funeral. And if my dad passes, what I would say at his. And I start to think about what is the greatest legacy a parent can leave their children? Is it a big inheritance? Is it their incredible good looks? As my son almost chokes himself in the front row. And this is kind of as I've gotten older, this is what I've started to think. As a parent, what would be the greatest thing my children could ever say about me at their funeral? And the thing that keeps coming back to me is this: we learned about our faith in God from our parents, because that's the only thing that's going to last. That's the only thing that's eternal I can ever give them. I couldn't leave them enough money for it to be eternal. I couldn't leave them possessions that are going to be eternal. The only eternal thing I could ever leave my children, my eternal legacy to my children, could be about what I taught them about what it means to have a relationship with God. That's it. That's the only permanent thing I could ever give them. That would be the greatest thing as a parent I could ever look down from heaven and hear my kids say at my funeral. You know what? We learned a lot about what it means to be a Christian from mom and dad. That's what it means to have our treasures stored in heaven. Jesus says, store up for yourself treasures in heaven where neither moth or rust destroy. Thieves can't break in and steal it. You think about that passage where Paul says, what can separate us from the love of Christ? He says, I'm convinced nothing can, not height or depth. And he goes through this long list of things, and that's what he is referring to. Thieves can't break in and steal the things that we have stored in heaven. And Jesus isn't telling these people that are working for a living here, hey, don't try to save up, don't try to make good decisions financially. He's not telling them not to try to have an inheritance for their children. He's not telling them that. What he's saying is that you really have to understand where a treasure is. Now, the term treasure is important, and Jesus makes a statement about it in verse 21. He says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, I have things that are really important to me that I don't consider treasures. You know what I mean? There are things that have sentimental value, things that are important, but they're not really treasures. Jesus, in using that term treasure, is setting this apart from other things. He said, because where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Any of you ever own something that was so important to you that it created problems between you and other people? Something that was so important to you. I try to imagine when I was growing up, my favorite car was a Mustang. I just thought Mustangs were the coolest things in the world. And when Stephanie's father passed away, he had a 66 Mustang Fastback that he bought brand new. And they were trying to decide which of the kids was going to get the car. None of the kids wanted the car. And Stephanie looked at me, she goes, do you want the car? I was like, uh-uh, I don't want it. Now, truth is, I would have loved to have had that car. But the problem with a car like that is, I wouldn't want a car that was so nice, I'd be constantly afraid something would happen to it. That's why I was very fortunate as a parent to have kids that ruined my car every time I got a new one. So I didn't have to worry about it. Sam goes down the side of it with her scooter, just a scratch all the way down the side. Stephanie takes out the neighbor's mailbox with the side view mirror. It's hanging off the side. And I was like, yep, okay, new car. That's taken care of. I'm not scared to park it anywhere now. Somebody gets out, hits it with the door. Hit it again. Just hit it again. It doesn't matter. That car's all beat up already. I had a friend when I was younger. He had a Corvette. And he come by one night and said, hey, let's go get supper. I said, okay. So he came by and picked me up in the Corvette, and we went somewhere to eat, and he parked. And I was like, dude, why did we just walk from my apartment? It's closer than where you parked. He goes, I don't want anybody to hit my car. I said, who wants a car you're afraid to drive? What? Oh, yeah, parked across three parking spaces. Absolutely, absolutely. But he was so far from the restaurant, nobody would care. You know, and you've seen those cars. Some of you are going, oh, yeah, I wanted a car like that. Well, you understand this mentality that we have treasures sometimes that are so important to us that they actually create problems between us and other people. Because in some people's eyes, that treasure is more important. Some of you may have heard phrases like this before. My husband loves that car more than he loves me. Or you know, my wife loves her job more than she loves me. Or you've heard those statements before from other people. Some of you may have even uttered those statements before. And so you know what Jesus means when he says, where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. And the problem is our heart can't be in two places. You notice that this is the passage that leads into what I preached on 3 weeks ago, where Jesus says, you can't serve two masters. You remember that statement? You can't serve two masters. Your heart can only belong to one thing. And if you're wondering this morning, well, how do I know where my heart is? Jesus says, well, that's easy. Your heart's where your treasure is. Your heart's where your treasure is. And so when you start thinking about eternity and you start thinking about what is my passion? Is my treasure my relationship with God, or is my treasure stuff? And you may say, well, can it be both? And the answer to that is sort of yes. I mean, both can be important to you, but only one can be priority. Only one can be the priority. And so Jesus says, this is how you know. Your heart is where your treasure is. And so some of you may have struggled with that in times as you felt like, well, I love God, but I don't feel like he's my priority. He's not the most important thing to me. And we've convinced ourselves that that's okay. But Jesus tells these people, he says, look, you need to make sure that you understand that your heart can't belong to multiple things. Your passion can't be divided that way. Your heart is going to be where your treasure is. And if your treasure is in things of this world, that's where your heart's going to be. And Jesus is not interested in being second place. Now listen to what he says in verse 22. He says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So then if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? Now you think about that statement. I was watching. I've been fascinated in recent weeks. There are three different channels on cable on Dish Network that are running NCIS marathons. And I guess when a show's on for 20 seasons, that can be a long marathon. And so what I've noticed is if you watch it on 126 and then you watch it on 128 2 days later, it's the same episodes. So you can just watch them over and over. But there was one the other day where they had gone in to arrest this, to confront this person. This person had some money that was hidden. And as they were talking to the person inadvertently looked into their office. And that's how they knew where the money was hidden, because of where the person looked. Our eyes follow what's important to us, right? Our eyes tend to betray where our passions are. And a lot of times you can tell what people care about just by following the eyes. And so as Jesus is talking about where our treasures are stored, he says it all comes down to the eye. Can we go back to verse 22? He says, the eye is the lamp of the whole body, right? The eye tells everybody the story. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if our passions are directed at a thing, that's where our focus is going to be, right? That's where our focus is going to be. And you can tell, you can see where people focus their attention. Have any of you ever known people where you've interacted with them and you've walked away questioning, well, that person loves that more than they love their wife. That person loves their car more than they love their wife. How can you tell? Well, you can tell by where their attention's focused. So Jesus says the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye's clear, okay? In other words, if your eyes are focused on eternal things, then your whole body is going to be full of light, because God is where your focus is going to be. And boy, that's going to let the light in. But look at what he says in verse 23. He says, if the eye is bad, if the eye is set on things of this world, then our whole body will be full of darkness. Now, one of the things that I find really interesting about that statement is that Jesus doesn't differentiate. He doesn't say, hey, your life's full of darkness if the things of this world you're focused on are evil. You know, you notice the word evil never appears there. He said, if your eye is bad, if you're focused on the wrong things, your body's going to be full of darkness. Now, some of you go, wait a minute. Are you saying that if my family is my priority over God, then my life is going to be full of darkness? No, that's what Jesus said. And so you may hear that and go, well, that doesn't make any sense. But it does make sense. In 1 John said, beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loves is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, because God is love. And if you read that chapter, what is the analogy that John uses in reference to God? What is the physical analogy? Light. It's light. Repeatedly, John talks about if you walk in Christ, you are full of light. And so when our passions and our focuses are things that are not of God, even when they may seem noble to us, they're still darkness. Because there's only one source of light, right? The only source of light is God. And if our focus isn't on God, then our life will not be full of light. And we go, and that's hard for us, because we think, well, there's nothing wrong with loving my family. And there isn't. There's nothing wrong with being passionate about doing a good job in my job. No, there isn't. We were sitting in the house last night. Stephanie goes, "You sure you should try to preach tomorrow?" I said, "Yeah." She said, and are you going to play bass too?" I went, "Well, yeah." She said, "Why?" And I said, "Because that's my job. My job mattered. I want to try to do my job when I can." You know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with trying to do well in your career. There's nothing wrong with trying to be a good husband or a good parent. There's nothing wrong with trying to be good financial stewards of what God's entrusted you with. But the trick is this: when those things are the priority, when that's what we're most focused on and we're not focused towards God, when we're not focused towards God, our life cannot be full of light. Because the only source of light is God. And so when the lens of our life, when our eyes are focused on things that are not of God first, then we're full of darkness. And that's hard for us, because we go, it doesn't make sense. God wants me to be all these things, and he does. He just wants you to be focused on him first. And so he says, if the eye is bad, the whole body will be full of darkness. And then this last statement: if then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? And notice that there's not a question mark there. It's an exclamation point. It's a statement of emphasis. And so it's amazing, because the statement that Jesus is making here is there are a lot of people who have convinced themselves their life is full of light, but it's not. Their life's not full of light. And it's not because they love things that God doesn't want them to love. It's because they love things in the wrong order that God wants them loved. So this morning, what I want to challenge you with is this idea about your treasure, about your passion, about the things that are most important to you. And to evaluate a really simple question: what is the thing in my life that I treasure most? Is the treasure in my life my relationship with God? Is that my treasure? Because if that's my treasure, that's where my heart's going to be. Or are there a list of other things that you treasure more than God, and you're like, why can't I have them all? And it's real simple. God says, because where your treasure is, that's where your heart's going to be. And if that's where your heart's going to be, that's where your focus is going to be. And if your focus isn't on me, you're going to be in darkness. Bye-bye. And so this morning, I want to challenge you to understand that we can have all these things that God intended us to have. We can be good family members. We can be good career people. We can have things and have them that God intended, as he's tried to bless us with. But the priority has to be in the right order, and he has to be first. He has to be the treasure. Because if he's not the treasure, everything falls apart. Everything falls apart.